Welcome back to part one of our four-part special interview of the Doors. So far, we have met keyboardist Ray Manzarek, drummer John Densmore, and guitarist Robbie Krieger. It is now time to hear about the lead singer, lyricist, and poet, Jim Morrison.
Me and my mother and father and a grandmother and a grandfather were driving through the desert at dawn, and a truckload of Indian workers had either hit another car or just, I don't know what happened, but there were Indians scattered all over the highway, bleeding. So the car pulls up and stops. That was the first time I tasted fear. I must have been about four. Like a child, it's like a flower. His head is just floating in the breeze, man. The reaction I get now, thinking about it, looking back, is that the souls or the ghosts of those dead Indians, maybe one or two of them, were just running around, freaking out, and just leaped into my soul. And they're still there.
Ray Manzarek.
Now, where Jim got that, where that came from, is the story of the dead Indians on the highway. When he was 4 years old, he saw this accident, and he says that the souls of one or maybe more of those dead Indians jumped into his body and are still in there. And he's the only guy I ever knew that was that interested in that sort of thing and could sort of become it on stage. And it wasn't like his background at all. He comes out of a military background. His father was in the Navy, and a very standard military American upbringing, very nice, white, clean upbringing. And yet there was that Indian side of him too. And I always wondered where that came from. And then one day he told me that story, and I thought to myself, that's it, man, that explains it, absolutely. There are two people in there. There's Jim Morrison, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, and there's Jim Morrison, some dead Indian, some American Indian in there, who took refuge in that soul of that four-year-old child, in the body of that four-year-old child, because that Indian was so shocked by being killed in this automobile accident that the soul, that Indian's soul, wasn't prepared to leave his body or to leave the earth, and immediately looked for refuge and saw this four-year-old child. And Jim says, child is like a flower, man. His head is just floating in the breeze, and the breeze blew in an Indian's soul and just whoom. I'm taking this one for myself.
Indians scattered on dawn's highway bleeding. Ghosts crowd the young child's fragile eggshell mind.
And Jim used to do Indian things on stage, man, with his speech, and Indian voices would sometimes come out of him. And I'd go, my God, what's going on with that guy? I know the guy is brilliant and incredible, but God, it's almost like he's possessed. And then when he told me the story, I realized that he was possessed. He was fortunately of a benign spirit, a good Indian, a good American Indian. And that was Jim Morrison, God and the devil, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, and an Indian. Couldn't be further opposite, Indian and the son of a Navy admiral.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
John Densmore.
It was like he was carrying this giant weight around, a medicine ball, of the problems of everything. I couldn't understand why he was always so down or stoned or crazy or some f***ing thing, you know. And now, with a little few years perspective, I can see, you know, that he was troubled about lots of things. And, you know, I was more concerned about him not getting fat or looking good for a gig or something, you know, which in retrospect, he was an amazing guy, you know. When I read his poems, just wish he was alive, that's all. But I knew that he knew I disapproved when he completely was, you know, blowing his brains out in one way or another. You know, he was self-destructing. But I couldn't get myself to tell him, you know.
I can see your face in my mind. I can see your face in my mind.
Krieger.
Well, I think one thing that I could say was that Morrison was the only, if not one of the few, performers that I knew that really believed it, what he was saying, you know. He lived that life, you know. He wasn't just up there doing his trip and then he'd go home and then watch TV and have a beer and laugh at it all, you know, and laugh all the way to the bank. He was a guy that he lived that life that he lived out on stage all the time. And when he went home, it was to some cheap motel somewhere, and he just hung out until the next show, you know. Sometimes, like, he would be the most great guy you've ever want to meet, you know. He'd just be super polite and together and clean and everything else, you know. But then the next day, he'd be completely the other way. But, you know, all those stories are true, most of them. And, like, you know, he lived, his whole life was right on the edge, you know. And that's why, and people could sense that when he was on stage, that, you know, there was always something under there ready to happen. And, you know, if they were lucky that night, it might happen, you know. All I can say is that he was totally committed to living the life of the revolution.
Once again, Robbie Krieger.
Another thing I wanted to mention was about the whole poetry aspect of Jim. You know, that he should really be recognized as one of the, not just some rock and roll poet or something, but you know, really one of the important poets of this last 50 years. You know,
John Densmore.
Maybe Jim had more sociological importance than that has yet to come out. I think so. Because I keep getting into his stuff, you know, and you know, I'm just beginning to understand the lyrics. No, you know, I mean, there's a lot of depth in there. I think that hasn't come out that much, and it will more. And if it can, still musically, terrific.
And finally, Ray Manzarek.
He was the lyricist. He was the guy who sang the words. Incredible words, man. God almighty, Jim's words were just incredible. And he had a great sense of rock and roll, of the music of rock and roll. So we saw eye to eye on the musical structure of rock and roll and the words. I was always just completely enamored of his words. Terrific lyrics.
Well, the clock says it's time to close now. I guess I better go.
As I stated at the beginning of tonight's show, I've waited a long time to bring this program to radio. I felt that part one of this four-part special should be used to introduce you to the principal players whom you've met tonight. As we progress through the next 3 weeks, you will hear from Alice Cooper, Bill Graham, Carrie Livgren of Kansas, and some friends who were with the Doors and whose stories may shock you. Also, we will bring some unreleased material never before heard on radio, and of course, the music of this sometimes frightening, sometimes risky, but always poetic band known as The Doors. Join us next week, same time and same frequency, for part two of our interview of The Doors. I'm Jim Ladd.